Straight Talk on WRHI FM 100.1 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And now here is Stephen Stone.
And good Friday afternoon, everyone. This is Straight Talk, where we talk about all things Rock Hill, Fort Mill, Tigger Cay, whatever is happening in the great county of York, and things that are involved up and down I-77. Our broadcast is always brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders, by Henderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at hendersongriggs.com. Good Pharmacy is with us today, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue, right around the corner here in Rock Hill. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, piedmontmedicalcenter.com. And as always, our streaming is provided by highspeedweb.net, 365 days a year, 24/7. Sue Berkowitz is with us today. She is the director of South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center, and we're going to find out not only who Sue is, but also what the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center is and what they do. So welcome to the program, Sue. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too, and thank you for inviting me up to Rock Hill today.
Well, we're glad you could make the ride there from that little community down there to the south that they call the Capital City.
Yes. Yes. And South Carolina Appleseed has been actually around for 40 years.
Okay.
Before we were South Carolina Appleseed, we used to be known as the South Carolina Legal Services Association. We were part of what was known as Legal Aid. Legal Aid does one-on-one legal assistance for the low-income community. And in fact, Rock Hill has an office, a legal aid office here. Jamie Bell, I believe, is the managing attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in 1996, Congress decided they didn't want to fund the type of work we did within the legal services community. We were known as the backup center. As a backup center, we did the advocacy, meaning we did legislative work and worked with state agencies on policies to make sure that they were doing things appropriately and right. And we trained attorneys, and we focused a lot substantively on issues. And when they defunded us in 1996, unfortunately, we went from an office of five down to an office of one. Me.
You, okay.
And, but luckily, the University of South Carolina School of Law offered us a free place to stay. We moved into the pro bono office there and were able to slowly build ourselves back. And I should also say the South Carolina Bar Foundation, which is funded through the interest on lawyers trust accounts, was willing to give us a little bit more money than we had originally received to do more work on looking at how to build pro bono work in South Carolina, but also to fund our work. And then we slowly built ourselves back up. We became a separate nonprofit. And in 1999, the Appleseed Foundation in Washington, D.C., which was started by the Harvard Law School graduating class of 1958,
okay,
decided instead of just giving more money to Harvard, which they thought had plenty of money, that what they would do is try to build centers in each state to do systemic policy work. Well, they got a grant to come to South Carolina, but we were already there. And even though they did not give us money to do this, we decided we would affiliate with them for a number of reasons. One, we wanted to be in a network with other centers and bright attorneys who were doing policy work around the country and have access to, hopefully, other resources that the Appleseed Foundation had. And so we changed our name to the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center. And since 1996, we've been operating under that name. We do work primarily to help marginalized communities who don't seem to receive the equitable treatment that they deserve, and work in areas like consumer protection, domestic violence, landlord-tenant, homeownership, immigrants' rights, criminal justice reform, trying to work to build systemic reform and policy, as well as work directly with the impacted communities, with our organizers, to make sure that the work that we're doing is the work that the communities want.
Define for me policy work. What is that exactly?
Well, it can take a number of different directions. First, we do a lot of research and analysis, mm-hmm. because we want to make sure whatever we're doing is based on analysis of policies to make sure that what we're advocating for is the appropriate policies. We work with the communities to see what policies they feel need to be changed, and then we can do it different ways. First of all, we work with state agencies because we want to make sure that in their discretion and in their administrative functions, they're doing what's appropriate and do it properly and follow the laws, whether it's, you know, filing regulations or enforcing the regulations. We also work a lot at the State House and get laws passed and advocate for laws at the State House, and do work up in Washington a little bit through our delegation. And because we are lawyers, right. If we do not find that we get the appropriate response and we think that laws are being broken, we will bring litigation.
Okay. Now, one of the topics that we wanted to talk about today was payday lenders. And as you were coming down I-77 Cherry Road on your way here to Substation 2, you passed a number of them on both sides of the street.
Yes, you have a prolific number of payday lenders and auto title lenders in the Rock Hill area.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason you have an extraordinary number in Rock Hill is because this type of lending is illegal in North Carolina, right over the border. So I don't think it's by chance there's as many here as we see.
It's kind of like dry counties. If you've ever lived in a dry county, and I did up in Kentucky, you get to the county line there, and coincidentally, there's a liquor store or a state store, as we know it as, being from the Northeast. You know.
Yes.
You from Connecticut, me from Maryland, or, you know, state stores or ABC stores.
Right.
There's always one, amazingly, there within feet of the county line. It's incredible, no matter what direction you're coming in or out of that county.
Absolutely. And I also think what's really interesting is a huge number of the payday lending stores and auto title lending stores that are on Cherry Road happen to be in the old video poker buildings that were declared unconstitutional. And when they were closed down and the laws changed, a lot of the payday lenders moved into those buildings as well as auto title lenders. And what's also interesting is that was really the proliferation of both of those industries in South Carolina.
Okay. So what is being done right now about these particular businesses? Because they seem to thrive, the payday loan people and the auto title businesses and all that. Obviously, it's legal in this state, so what are they doing wrong?
Well, I think what we have to look at is why they're proliferating is who are they taking advantage of, and are they meeting a need, or are they taking advantage of people in need?
Okay,
and
which is it?
I would say it's the latter.
All right.
Because what ends up happening is people who don't always have the opportunity to go into a bank, or perceive that they don't have the opportunity to go into the bank because of either historical racism, primarily historical racism, they would find themselves being easily lured into these types of lending institutions. And, you know, and I was interested to see that Founders is one of your sponsors, because mm-hmm. I think credit unions have a really wonderful opportunity and do often step up for people who have not historically had the opportunity to go into what we think of as regularly regulated institutions like banks. And I think that that is an option that should be often investigated by people who go to payday lenders. So the payday lending industry, I mean, first of all, we should go back even further. You know, South Carolina does not have interest rate caps. We are what's called a deregulated state. And when I first started practicing law and I first started seeing contracts from the finance companies at 60 to 90% interest, I was just shocked. Coming from the Northeast, I didn't realize that there were no usury caps. But I was also seeing interest rates at triple digit at the time. And in 1995, we actually got the legislature for small loans to cap interest rates below triple interest digits and leave them at the paltry 60 to 90% interest rates, which I was not happy about, but at least we weren't seeing 130, 140% interest rates. We also saw limitations in the amount of times that they could flip or refinance people for what we would call no benefit loans. Because when someone would take out a loan from a finance company, they often couldn't afford the payments to begin with. And so the finance company knew that and would get them to pay for a couple months, and after 3 months would get them to flip the loan. And when they flipped the loan or renewed the loan, they were paying, they had to pay an initial fee and monthly fees all over again. All the interest had accrued. And so it was like the gift that kept giving. One time I had a client, which we testified about, who started the year owing, with a $300 loan.
Okay.
And she was flipped 4 times during that year because that was the number of times she could be flipped and they could charge all these fees and charges again. She got a total of $56 in her pocket, paid, and by our analysis, $656 to the lender, and still owed $350. So you can see it's quite a lucrative business, and sometimes one of the longest relationships some of my clients would have with these lenders. Then in 1999, and payday lending and auto title lending came up, and payday lending's even more insidious. While they didn't take a security interest, and often the way finance companies use their power over the consumer is they would have you take a interest in collateral, like your TV or your child's car seat or your child's Nintendo, which you didn't want those
right.
things to be repossessed. They weren't worth anything to the finance company, but boy, it sure gave them leverage. Well, payday lenders operated a different way. Initially, payday lenders would offer somebody a loan, say it was for $100,
okay.
but you'd write them a check for $125, and you didn't have $125 at the end of the week, but you could give them $25. So they would threaten to submit your check, and if they did, it would bounce and you could get arrested. But if you gave them $25, they would extend it over and over and over again. And so this way you wouldn't get arrested, but that check could be extended every week for a year. And think about 52 times 25. That's a lot of money.
Right?
So we knew something needed to be done. And I think you may be aware that Advance America,
mm-hmm.
which is the largest payday lender in the country,
right.
is located in Spartanburg.
Oh, is that their home office?
They've been located in Spartanburg.
Okay.
So they hired a number of lobbyists and said, we don't like when people do things like this, you know, lend money and threaten to arrest people. So we want to try to regulate this. And I will say, they were much smarter than us, because the way they crafted their business model was, and we said, well, we don't want people to borrow. We want someone to pay off their loan before they can get a new loan.
Right.
And we also want to make sure that people don't borrow more than $300. And it was always the legislature's intention that people should only have one loan at a time. Unfortunately, they were much smarter on how they wrote the legislation. So we started seeing people borrowing $300, but each contract was $300. And we would actually see an individual lender give people 2 contracts for $600.
Okay.
Initially, they were going to charge 12% interest. At the last minute, they pulled a switcheroo and they charged 15%. And then they took the position that it was the contract that was only $300. They could have as many contracts as they wanted. And so one of the reasons you see so many payday lenders, and you don't see as many small payday lenders, but you see as many payday lenders as you did, is they cluster around each other. Because what ended up happening is I would talk to people, if they had one loan, they had seven or eight.
Really?
Right. Sure. Because they would borrow $300. They owed $345. They only made $250 or $300 a week. So they would get told by the lender, well, we can't do anything about this, but if you go next door and borrow $300, could you pay us $45? And the person would say, yeah, I can pay you $45. So they go next door, borrow $300, owe that lender $345, and then come and pay the $300 to the original lender. And the next thing you know, they'd go, well, do you need any more money? And they'd go, yeah, because I just gave you the $300 that I borrowed. So now they owed not $345. They had two contracts for $345. And there would be more, and they would have to go and borrow more and more and more.
It's like
and
a pyramid.
It was absolutely a pyramid. And even legislators who love business and didn't have a real problem with gouging people did say, well, you know what? People were only supposed to borrow one loan at a time. And we looked at a number of different types of, and this was in 1999. So in 2007, we started trying again, because if there's one lesson I've learned in the legislature, is once you do something, they're not going to be willing to do anything about it again for a long time.
So even if it's not enough.
Even if it's not enough. No, they want to see how it plays out. But we were able to get the regulator to gather a lot of data, and we were able to be able to show what was going on. And, of course, I was the only one interested in the data, and I started keeping track. And I found that by 2009, there were 1.5 million payday loans made in South Carolina.
How many again?
1.5 million payday loans.
All right.
And we know that at that point in 2009, there were only about 4.5 million people. We also know that a million of those were kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would ask people, did you ever take out a payday loan? No. Well, we knew that they were capturing a certain group of folk who got caught up in this horrible, horrible lending scheme. And we needed to get the number of loans definitely limited and have a database. But what we really thought is we need to have an interest rate cap. It needs to be 36%, because the way it's written right now, they charge $15 per hundred. But if we had an interest rate cap, it would limit how many loans they would make. And of course, they said, well, we can't make any money only charging 36%. And I'm
really
absolutely. And I'm sure, I know, I think 36% is an awful lot of interest to be charged.
I do, too. I tend to stay away from credit cards. That I get these things in the mail, as we all get in
right.
the mail, and then it's like 25 or 29%. I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
Right. I would not do
you
that.
You know? No
yeah.
way.
It's a great way to get things to add up and make it
unaffordable. Fast. Yeah.
Well, when we started working on it, we actually had a bill that got introduced with a 36% interest rate cap. And I will say that that is what's in the Military Lending Act. So none of our active military can be charged more than 36%.
Okay.
And we thought, well, if it's good enough for the military, isn't it good enough for all consumers? And we actually got the bill introduced, and our bill sponsor was a conservative Republican from Horry County. He got 84 co-sponsors out of 124 in the House of Representatives.
Because it made sense to do it that way. That's
it did.
Why. We're going to take our mid-program break. Sue Berkowitz is with us, the director of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center. And remind you, the Straight Talk is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And as always, we broadcast live from Substation 2 here on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, across from Winthrop University. Now I put the pressure on the counselor. I turn the table here now. Counselor, they make subs and salads right before your very eyes.
Yes, they do.
And it's a magical way they do it, and that way is slice, slice, slice.
Garden.
She'll get it when we close. Don't worry, Charlie. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Love the bread. Number 19's the best.
Fresh, delicious bread.
It's fresh.
The food is really good, and it's a great price.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Cruise to financial freedom with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. With our low rates, there is no better time to apply. Get a pre-approved spending limit valid for 30 days by applying for your auto loan early so you know what to look for before you start shopping. You can also use our auto loan calculator in Founders Online to set your budget and plan ahead. Visit RelaxJoinFounders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
This is Dr. Karen Jenkins, Emergency Room Director at Piedmont Medical Center. When someone is experiencing a life-threatening emergency, such as a stroke or a heart attack, every second counts. Piedmont Medical Center's emergency departments in Rock Hill and on Gold Hill Road in Fort Mill are open 24/7 to treat life's unexpected emergencies. Even in the middle of a pandemic, our commitment to providing safe, high-quality emergency medical care in our community remains strong. Piedmont Medical Center. A community built on care.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
A good deal for a delicious sandwich.
Quality of the food. I get what I want. It tastes great every time.
Hit the spot. Definitely. It's amazing.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders.
And welcome back into our Straight Talk program. Director of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center, Sue Berkowitz, is with us. And you were telling us about a marvelous piece of legislation, and we had to go to break. So let's come back and tell us the rest of the story.
Well, I think it's evidenced by the number of payday lenders that are out there. It died.
You could feel that follow-up question coming, couldn't you?
Yeah, it just died. We couldn't get it out of subcommittee. The subcommittee chair later became governor, but she wouldn't let it out of her subcommittee, and the committee chair wouldn't let it out of full committee. So she was listening to her subcommittee chair, I'm sure. There were changes made. The legislature did say, yes, we only allow one loan at a time. And I will say, Senator Wes Hayes was one of our champions in the Senate, who was always fighting to try to end this type of lending. And it was through his leadership we were able to get a database, one loan at a time. But the lenders were able to keep a lot of the things that they still do.
I've got to ask you, how can they continue to operate like this, basically, literally unchecked?
Well, there are reports that I look at and a few other people look at. They don't make as many loans anymore, and they brag about that because they increased the amount that they were able to lend when we made the change. They now lend $550. So they make about 800,000 loans a year. But here's the thing you need to listen to is they only have about 100,000 unique borrowers. So your average borrower probably takes out about 10 loans a year because there are those that only take one or two. So if an average borrower only does take out 10 loans a year, what that says is they take out a loan that they can't afford. So they borrow, they pay it back, and they reborrow because there's no cooling off period. If I pay my loan off on Wednesday, they take the money out Wednesday evening, I can go right back Thursday morning. And I can do that seven times. On the eighth time, they go, you must have a problem with this and you really can't afford it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make you wait till Friday.
Oh, that extra day.
Yeah. That whole extra day. So, yes, it is a huge problem. It is about a spiral of debt that people get trapped in because they don't have elsewhere to go. And when you look at who is borrowing, it is people who really do perceive they can't go to anywhere else. And it's people who don't have the ability to repay. And it is often, I think it's interesting we're doing this on Juneteenth because there is targeting in especially the African American community and communities of color, because they often have been closed out of the banking system and are unbanked in traditional banks. And I think that also says why in our legislature it is something that happens, and has been allowed and not taken away.
In our final 4 minutes, what's being done to correct this now?
Well, there was a piece of legislation that was introduced this session, and there was a hearing right before everything shut down.
Right.
I don't know that it meant anything was going to go forward, but we are working with many organizations. We have a South Carolina Fair Lending Coalition, and if you go to SouthCarolinaFairLending.org, if you go to our website, we have lots of information about it, but we're working with many organizations. We're working with the Self-Help Credit Union, the Center for Responsible Lending, Community Works. We're working with the NAACP, the South Carolina Coalition for Community Development Associations, and we have said enough is enough. So we will be going back to the legislature. That probably means if any lobbyists are listening, paid lobbyists are listening, they're probably already calling all the payday lenders and going, uh-oh, you better hire us because we hear they're after us. But last time we did this, there was only AARP, the South Carolina Baptist Convention, and South Carolina Appleseed that really went after this. We're going to have a much bigger coalition, and we've got stories from people about what this does to these to families and also small businesses, because now we're starting to see these types of lending situations happening to small businesses, to entrepreneurs.
Wow.
And if we want to see people get out of what has happened to us because of COVID, we've got to stop this.
Well, it sounds like you have the strength in numbers now in which to really take it full head on, and wish you the best of luck.
Well,
because
thank you.
It is, you know, amazing that they've been able to do this for so long, basically unchecked, as it were.
Yes, and I think that I want to thank you, because I think it's also having the opportunities to talk and get the information out through shows like yours that really helps, because people who are caught up in these debts don't know where to turn. And I will tell folks, if they want to go to our website,
which is
scjustice.org.
scjustice.org.
You can then go, what you can do is there'll be a pop-up. It'll allow you to send us a question if you've run into problems. You can email us, and we will get back with you.
We'll make that the final word. Sue Berkowitz, I told you it was going to fly right by our 30 minutes.
Did.
She is the director of the South Carolina Appleseed Legal Justice Center. Our broadcast brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Now, I know she's ready for it this time. We broadcast live from Substation 2 here on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, where they make fresh subs and salads right before your very eyes. And the magical way they do it, counselor, is?
Slice, slice, slice.
Garden. There you go. She's got it. I knew she'd get it. She's a smart lady. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
It was an honor. All right, Manny Kimmel, back with you Monday. Have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day and happy Juneteenth. I'm Stephen Stone. Until next time.